Hello, everyone. I am Ben Nolan, and I am Managing Director of Research at Stifel. As probably many of you are familiar with me, I've been covering the shipping space for a long time now, and I would like to welcome everybody to Capital Link's Deep Dive webinar series. And as part of that series, we have the opportunity to discuss various shipping companies. And today, it's my privilege to be speaking with Mr. Mads Peter Zacho, or how would you do that in Danish? Would it be like
Mads Peter Zacho?
Okay. So from Navigator Gas, he's the CEO, and really looking forward to this conversation. Navigator's an interesting and unique company in the LPG and petrochemical gas market. So the Navigator ticker symbol is NVGS, and they specialize again in moving gases, but specifically utilizing primarily handy-sized gas carriers, which again is a unique asset class. And also in addition to petrochemical gases and LPG, that also includes ammonia, but they also have a number of infrastructure projects, which we will get into, so marrying shipping with infrastructure. So now, for the legalese, before I start the call, please note that this discussion is strictly informational and educational in purpose and should not be relied upon. Hopefully, you can rely upon something here. But so this does not constitute an offer to buy or sell securities or investment advice or advice of any kind. So there, got that out of the way and on to the fun stuff. So I gave a little bit of a description, Mads, of what Navigator is, but you could probably do a little bit better, or maybe a lot of bit better than what I did. So why don't we start there? You just tell us what you think Navigator is.
Yeah, so Navigator is a gas tanker owner and operator. We own and operate 56 gas tanker vessels. We have 4 on order, so a total of 60 vessels. And we also own 50% of the Morgan's Point ethylene export terminal, which is the world's largest ethylene export terminal. So a combination, you could say, of shipping and some infrastructure. We are listed on the New York Stock Exchange. We have 25 years of history in transporting chilled and compressed gases. And we are headquartered in London, but we have global operations, so with the offices around the globe. So I think that's the short description. And I think we have very exciting opportunities ahead of us, simply because the available types of cargo to be transported will grow, in our view, significantly over the next couple of years. And then we have the right competencies to be a primary transporter of petrochemical gases, ammonia, CO2 also in the future.
We'll get into some of those end markets in a bit. But before I do that, you've been at the company, what, maybe 3 years now, is that right?
Yeah, 2.5 years, yeah.
2.5 years. I wanted to start with maybe what you think makes Navigator unique and special, and what makes it different than, you know, other shipping companies, because you've been around the industry for a while. What separates it, do you think?
No, I think an important difference is that we are in a unique segment. We are in a relatively narrow segment where we don't have a lot of peers that you can compare us directly to. Typically, when I speak on panels and so on, I would tend to team up with Dory and BW LPG, despite the fact that there's actually not so much in common between their companies and ours. Our cash flows and our market rates and so on are much more stable. We transport many more different types of cargoes that we can opportunistically switch between. And then we also have this combination of having vessels, but also owning infrastructure at the same time. So we span a bigger part of the supply chain in transporting petrochemical gases and ammonia, or petrochemical gases in particular, than any of the other companies that you would typically compare us to. So I think we're a little bit of a unique company, but I think we have a great space in the energy supply chain that we hold, and where we have a large market position.
Continuing on with that, so 2.5 or 3 years ago, when you were approached with this opportunity, what really? We're going to go off the beaten path with this a little bit.
Yeah. No, it's cool. Let's do that.
What really drew you to this opportunity? What made you created that spark that said, "This is a place I want to be"?
No, I mean, first of all, I've known of Navigator for a long time because I've been in the gas tanker space for quite some time before. So I'd admired the company and known the unique positioning that it has in its segment. But I think what primarily attracted me was that the company has so many opportunities. Having this deep competence, you can say, in the transportation of chilled and compressed gases, means that when the energy transition happens, the transportation of CO2, the transportation of clean ammonia, and similar new types of gases, it's a very special competence to have. And there's a very, very exciting markets that are opening up for Navigator, where we can deploy those competences that we have that probably very few other shipping companies actually have. So we are uniquely positioned for whatever's coming to the shipping segment, and that means that we can both grow and develop our existing niches, but also dive into new ones where exciting markets will come. Yeah, so I think in terms of sustainability in its original sense, that we have a long and very exciting future ahead of us, whatever comes.
Good. That's a good segue. We'll hit on some of those new markets soon. But when we talk about sort of who Navigator is today, mm-hmm. and the business that you do today, can you maybe talk through the three main cargo categories that you carry and what you think the outlook of those are. So that being LPG, petrochemical gases, including ethane, ethylene, butadiene, yeah. whatever, and yes. And then ammonia. So yes. maybe hit on those and how you think those markets are developing.
Yeah, maybe if I start out with LPG, because we do some LPG regional distribution. We've done that for many years. It used to be our primary market, and today it's maybe around a third or 30% of our total volume is transporting LPG. It's a great market, and LPG, you know it from your gas barbecue at home. It's used for energy and for cooking and so on in developing countries. It's a market that will continue to grow, and you know there's a lot of drilling of natural gas liquids in the US, and you'll see much more export coming out of North America. Typically, we will not be transporting the LPG from North America to, let's say, East Asia or long distances. That'll be done on the VLGCs. But there'll be a lot of regional distribution, and we are taking care of that. It's good, solid business, but it's probably not an area that will grow much for us. We see that there are even better opportunities in ammonia. Ammonia has grown quite a bit in recent years, particularly after the Ukraine war started, where the original, you could say, trading patterns from Russia through Ukraine into the Black Sea were disappeared. So now ammonia going into Europe comes from North America and other faraway places, and it's being transported on our ships. So today it's 20% of our business, and we think that's going to be a gradually growing part too, particularly when it comes to clean ammonia production that will be supplied to power stations or even as a marine fuel. So exciting midterm opportunities, but also a very solid market here today. So that's the second one. And the third one is the petrochemicals. And that's probably where we'll see the most growth in the near term. And that's mainly our own fault, because the expansion of the Morgan's Point terminal that will start relatively soon, the expansion has been completed, and we'll see the first gas starting to flow from the expanded part of the terminal. That means that a lot more ethylene is going to be pushed into the market for long transportation, long haul transportation, and that'll happen on our ships. So that'll mean lots more business for ethylene transportation. And then we have ethane that continues to be a good commodity for us. It's long haul transportation, and it's a rapidly growing market because the US ethane is super competitive cost-wise compared to anywhere else in the world. So a couple of good growth opportunities, and generally four segments we're looking at that are all doing well.
Great. So now let's talk, and you touched on this a little bit, but let's talk to sort of some of the longer term, bigger picture growth opportunities. There's green ammonia, and that has a number of potential end markets, whether that's ship fuel or power generation or whatever. There is the potential for CO2 movement through carbon capture. Can you maybe talk through sort of how you corporately or how Navigator thinks about what the long-term outlook is for some of these categories and how you expect to participate in it?
Yes. If I start out with the clean ammonia, and I use clean ammonia for both green and blue ammonia, where green ammonia comes from solar panels and windmills that produce electricity. It becomes green hydrogen, and then that's developed into green ammonia. And also the blue side, which comes from natural gas, where carbon capture and storage combined with that makes it a low greenhouse gas emitting fuel and energy source. So I combine those two and call it just clean ammonia because it doesn't contribute to greenhouse gas emissions. Here we see that the clean ammonia can be used as a power source, both in power plants. Let's say an example is in Japan, where they've built some very efficient and relatively modern coal-fired plants after they scaled down their nuclear power stations. Now, the problem with those are, even though they're very efficient, they also emit a lot of CO2. And a way for Japan to reduce their emissions footprint is to co-fire coal and clean ammonia, and thereby gradually, by increasing the amount of ammonia burned, will lower gradually their emissions footprint. This is a market that we see developing. We see the Japanese government, but also local power producers being very interested in this market. So we can participate in that market either by transporting the ammonia on handy-size or mid-size vessels, but we are also looking into investing into the production of clean ammonia in Texas, where we have talked about the 1008 project, where we have invested a little bit of money already and committed $2.5 million to get that project off the ground. When that happens, when we have FID taken, that will be with up to $100 million investment from our side into the marine infrastructure of the project. We're not going to own part of a plant that produces ammonia, but we're going to own, you could say, 50% of the port logistics, the pipes, the tanks, and so on, like we do in Morgan's Point. So that's an opportunity where we can participate upstream, and then we can do the sea transportation, and then we also have some smaller ventures, you could say, on the downstream, looking into the marine fueling side, which is another application, potential application for ammonia, so it becomes a bunker kind for shipping. Mind you, at shipping, we are burning about 300 million tons of marine oil every year. If you adjust for the energy density, then you would need to replace that, let's say, 600 million tons of clean ammonia if all ships went to burn ammonia. And compare that to 180 million tons that are being produced annually now, it's, of course, an incredibly large growth in the use of ammonia. That's not going to happen on day one, and there'll be many marine fuels, but just, you could say, a third or half of the marine market being served by ammonia, that means that a lot of ammonia needs to be produced and transported. A little bit long-winded answer, but that was just the ammonia side of it.
Yeah, well, we'll get to CO2, but I want to stick with ammonia, and you mentioned 1008, and uses of marine fuel. Specifically, I want to dive in there because I know previously before you joined Navigator, you were with the Maersk Center for Renewable Energy, if I'm remembering correctly. And so I know that you've delved a lot into what are the right fuels for, you know, energy emissions and the applications. Maybe talk through how ammonia stacks up relative to some of the other things that are out there.
And it's a much debated topic, because you do see some shipping companies that are ordering methanol vessels, and there are others that say, oh no, we need to go the carbon capture way, where we combine existing, let's say, LNG fueled vessels with carbon capture, and that means it will bring down the emissions that way. I think we will go for a multi-fuel future. There will be several different kinds of fuel that will help the shipping sector to decarbonize over time. And I don't see it much of a competition as such, because I think one of the big problems for speeding this up is that the availability of fuel is taking longer than people had thought to ramp up production. The good thing for clean ammonia, and particularly the blue version, where you use LNG as a feedstock and then at the plant capture the carbon and sequester it, here you can actually ramp it up relatively quickly. So I think ammonia is unique and different from green methanol and biofuels and so on, in that you can actually ramp up production to millions of ton in a relatively short span of time, because the CO2 capture and sequestration technology exists, and the otherwise it's just the regular typical ammonia production process that you're applying. So lots of feedstock and a technology that's well understood. For example, the 1008 project here, it's planned to be a more than a million tons per annum production, whereas when you see other early stage production facilities for green methanol or others, we're talking 30,000, 100,000 tons, much, much smaller. So I think big volumes, much, much faster ramp up. That's where ammonia is unique and good. Secondly, it can also be produced relatively cheaply, because in the US, the LNG is cheap. And also you have the Inflation Reduction Act. And there's a new administration coming in, and how they look at it, we'll have to see. But I think there's a good likelihood that the 45Q, which is the part that deals with subsidizing CO2 sequestration, that will stay in place. And that means that structurally, blue ammonia will be cheaper to produce in Texas than anywhere else in the world. And that makes it competitive compared to most other candidates for marine fuel. So structurally cheaper, and also easier to ramp up fast. Those are the benefits for ammonia. And then there's this toxicity issue that speaks against it, that ammonia is toxic. You can smell it if it comes out, but if it comes into an engine room, it can pose significant danger to the crew on board the ship. And that needs to be dealt with through procedures and passive, you could say, safety technologies to make sure that it doesn't happen and it doesn't hurt people.
Right. So we've talked to some of those in markets, and it does sound like there are opportunities for growth in terms of number of cargoes going forward. But one of the things that really makes Navigator unique relative to most other shipping companies is that you do have infrastructure assets rather than simply being, you know, a shipping company. Let's start with Morgan's Point. Maybe can you give us a little bit of an overview of what that is?
Yes.
And how it fits with your story.
Yeah. So Morgan's Point is the world's largest ethylene export terminal. So it exports a million tons per year. That's the nameplate capacity. And that's the capacity it's been running at pretty much since the startup. So it works well, and you're loading, we're loading the ships at Morgan's Point, and they go off to China and off to Europe with the ethylene for the manufacturers there. We are now expanding the terminal so that it can add another 550,000 tons of capacity, potentially all the way up to 3 million tons, because it has this flex feature that whenever the chilling equipment is not being used for ethane export by enterprise, it can be used for ethylene export shared between the partners, enterprise, and us through our terminal. So quite big upside. We can only sell forward to our customers the 1 plus 0.55 million tons capacity, but there can be spot cargoes in excess of that, up to a total of 3 million. It will not be 3 million for the first couple of years because the capacity for ethane is right now sold forward to customers. So it will be needed for ethane chilling and export. But over time, we expect that Enterprise will gradually move its ethane exports to Beaumont, where they are expanding their ethane export facility. So it could be more concentrated for ethylene in Morgan's Point. So the outlook is that significantly larger volumes than today will go out of the terminal. We service it with our vessels today. We have between 40 and 50% of the shipped volumes gone on our ships, and they go long haul to China or to Europe. We think there are very significant advantages for Navigator in this, that we have a great insight into which customers are shipping how much and when, so that we can position our ships and make sure that the customers have the ships available when they need it. So we think there are good synergies here, and that also means that we are able to plan our maintenance, plan our provisions, our crew change, and so on. It's great for safety because it means that we have we know exactly what's going to happen when, and it also means efficiency for our customers, that they don't get surprises and they don't have additional unwanted cost coming in. So it's a win-win. It just optimizes that supply chain. We call it the floating pipeline, where we can make sure that the ships are there on time, in position, ready for taking or for loading and transport.
And you already talked about the 1008 and the possibility in the future of having participation in the ammonia infrastructure, yeah, marine infrastructure. How do you envision Navigator moving forward in terms of the combination of infrastructure like Morgan's Point or 1008 or other things relative to the shipping business?
No, I think that shipping business may still be the core because they are also here very exciting opportunities, and we have a good market, we have a good position in the market, so we really like our shipping business. So we'll be growing our shipping business at the same time as we'll be growing our infrastructure business. So that means it will be a gradual transition, but we expect that the infrastructure part will probably become a larger part. Today it's, let's say, around 10% of EBITDA or a little bit below. But over time, if that grows up to become 20 or 25%, I'd be a very happy man. That's going to take some time because we need to find the right projects. But that's our aim to gradually grow the infrastructure part of it. And it doesn't have to be only upstream as we see it here. It can also be downstream. So when the ships are discharging, that we can take part in storage facilities and onward distribution from the port onwards.
Yeah.
And here the opportunities are very significant, but I think for us having a good understanding of both the ammonia market, the LPG market, the petrochemicals market, that we can, I mean, we have something to bring to the table with potential partners.
Yeah, and I as you know, I've long been a proponent of in your space where it is very specific and bespoke cargoes and things like that. Being able to bootstrap yourself into demand is unique, and I think it's something that sets Navigator apart.
Yeah, and the good thing is that we have involved ourselves in this work already, and we work with a number of different partners. I don't know if you saw just a couple of weeks back, we did an ammonia ship-to-ship transfer down in Pilbara together with MOL, with Yara, with Rio Tinto, and BHP Billiton. So a number of important stakeholders for us, customers in different ways as well. And this is a way to, you could say, together build our competencies and our understanding of it and make sure that we are well prepared for the next steps when it comes. And that means bunkering operations for ammonia is also something that we could participate in, making our ships available as bunker vessels.
Sure. So, as cargoes grow and as you're creating new infrastructure that create cargoes, you need more ships. You've ordered four that are, again, a unique ship type. I think nobody has built any of these types of ships before,
right.
Or at least to the size and specification that these ships are. You maybe talk through sort of how you think about managing the shipping business, managing the demand for ships, and how you're positioning the company for that.
Yeah, no, I'd be happy to. And we're keenly aware that it doesn't make sense for us to expand, you could say, the export capacity out of Morgan's Point if there are no ships to transport the cargo. So we need to make sure that we are there for our clients and to have the vessel capacity to move it. Now, we're building these four ships, and that's going to mean a significant reduction in the per ton transportation cost for ethylene on those ships, because they are more than twice as big as our existing handy-sized workhorses that service the terminal. Now, many will say, hey, is the receiving terminals, are they of the right size? And we've done a great analysis here on which ports are being built out, which ones are having additional tank capacity being built, so that we can grow together with our customers, so they can take bigger stems, bigger loads, you could say, over time. And we'll make sure that we grow together with our customers so that they can have economies of scale, much lower transportation cost. So and we are the ones who are doing it with them. There'll still be a lot of work for our handies, but gradually, like in most shipping segments, economies of scale drive that over time vessel sizes have to go up, so the end price for the customer goes down. In the meantime, here will be 2 years before we have those vessels delivered, and we are nosing around trying to see, can we secure tonnage, existing tonnage on the water, to make sure that we have ships available to service our customers in this aspect. So we'll talk more about that if and when we are successful in it, but we want to be sure that there's an uninterrupted flow for our customers and they can move the ethylene that they are signing up for at Morgan's Point.
Sure. So
and maybe I should just add also here that the ships that we are building are optimized not only for the receiving terminals, but also to go through the Panama Canal. So they have the largest specifications for going through the old locks, which are the ones that will be more available, whereas the newer locks will mainly be reserved for, let's say, cruise ships or LNG ships. So we've optimized them in many different ways that also ensured that there's full flexibility so that they can use, let's say, shore electricity when that becomes available in ports, and also if carbon capture technology takes off, we would be able to retrofit that onto the ship, and we may also over time be able to retrofit them to be ammonia propelled if that becomes the economical choice. So full flexibility and lots of economies of scale for our customers.
You mentioned carbon capture, and I meant to get back to that earlier, and so we're going a little out of order, but I did want to hit on that. There was just recently the first CO2 ship, or the ship moving CO2, capable of moving CO2, was delivered.
Yeah.
It's you know, a completely new business.
Yes.
How do you see that the ocean transportation of CO2 playing out, and where do you think your role is in all of that?
Yeah, I think in CO2, I mean, there are two dimensions to it. One is to have it on board the ship, capturing the CO2 that's being emitted from the ship. I've always been a little bit skeptical about that, because I think the whole logistics part of offloading the CO2 when you get to port and so on is an added complication that will make it difficult. And I think also the efficiency of the equipment on board the ship is going to make it hard. But I recognize a lot of smart people are working on it, so maybe they will figure something out that I don't see yet. When it comes to the land side, already now we are seeing power plants being equipped with carbon capture and storage, and we're looking to do the same for ammonia production in with 1008, as we talked about previously. There will be lots of CO2 captured. Some of it will be stored nearby on land or through pipelines, but there will also be massive amounts of CO2 that needs to go by vessels because pipelines are not available or nearby sequestration is not available. We started out with the UK alone. We worked together with the UK government and with Uniper, a large power producer, through our joint venture called Blue Streak with Bumi Armada. We think that in the UK alone, there's more than 30 million tons of CO2 that needs to go by ship. And that's, of course, an incredible opportunity for shipping. And then you add the rest of Europe, and then you add the rest of the world. So the volumes will be staggering here. But I want to be clear that we are not building ships in speculation, hoping that we will get a slice of that business. We will only build CO2 ships because they are specific for CO2. And they are more expensive than other gas carriers. We'd only build these if we have a contract, a long-term contract against it.
Understood. So that gets us back to where we were headed earlier. You're building infrastructure, investing in the potential for other infrastructure. You're building ships. There's opportunities for things like CO2. How do you pay for all these things?
Yeah, the good thing is that we have generated a robust cash flow over the past couple of years. That means that we've been able to pay down debt. We used to have a net debt to EBITDA of 7x, let's say 4 or 5 years ago, and now it's at 2.3. So we have paid down debt significantly. At the same time, we started paying dividends, and we've done share buybacks also in a pretty significant manner over the last couple of years. So you could say the capital structure side we worked on, and then we are in a good position. But at the same time, we have also had capital to invest into the four new builds that we are doing now. Part of it will be financed from banks, and banks are definitely open for business right now. So we will be taking on more bank debt for this. But even then, we will have additional capital to enter into new and exciting ventures. Mind you, let's say the 1008, $100 million I talked about for the marine infrastructure part here, that investment is likely going to be 28, 29. So it's not imminent. It'll not bind or tie up any capital over the next 2 years or so. So I think we will be in pretty good shape. So it's tiered over time where we can generate the capital that's needed for it.
All right. So we've hit on a lot of important topics. As the CEO of the company, there's a lot of balls in the air for Navigator at the moment. But you know, putting on your big picture hat and looking out, I don't know, let's say 10 years, 2035, because 5 years is probably not quite enough. Where would you like to see, and where would you like to take Navigator in 10 years' time relative to where we are now?
Yeah, we want to be, you could say, the leading player in the handysize and midsize segment for transportation globally on ethylene with a modern, efficient fleet. We think this market will continue to grow with the additional natural gas liquids production, particularly from North America. So this is our core business today, and we expect to grow that. And then we will also be a large player in the CO2 market and the clean ammonia transportation market. So two new businesses that have grown from very little to something quite significant. And if that ends up being, you could say, 30-40% of our business over time, we would be very pleased with that. It would give us a good diversified product mix in terms of what the cargoes that we transport, and also some resilience, you could say, if it was to be that fossil energy became less economical in the future. So a good, robust portfolio of shipping businesses and cargoes that we transport, and then at the same time having the infrastructure investment that would grow gradually as a bigger part of our portfolio. So we will have a bigger part of the supply chain for these types of cargoes as we go along. We were recently rated as number three by Webber in terms of the ESG performance out of 64 companies. We're incredibly proud about that, and we want to continue to be seen as really good stewards of capital and also having our house in order when it comes to all things corporate governance. So I think those are some of the important parameters to that I want to see Navigator associated with when we look down the road.
First of all, Randy Givens gave me a list of things that we wanted to talk about, things like what your favorite food is, what your hopes and dreams are, what really annoys you about Øyvind Lindeman, things like that.
Yeah.
Are there any topics that we haven't hit on?
We haven't talked about politics, and we haven't talked about, you could say, macroeconomic instability, or not macroeconomic, but geopolitical instability and so on. And that does keep me awake at night, I must say, because there's so much uncertainty out there. But I tell myself that typically in the past, when there are disruptions globally, when there's tension, it tends to not be bad for shipping. Often it means disruption of one in one way or another, additional transportation miles or abilities to seek new trading patterns. And most of those situations, it's actually ended being good for shipping in as such. So secondly, we have a new president in the US. Donald Trump is coming in January, and there'll be some of us who don't quite know what to expect. But what we know for sure is that he wants the U.S. to become the cheapest producer of energy in the world, and that means that it'll be easier to build infrastructure in Texas for export purposes and so forth. So I actually think that it means there'll be a lot more product for us to transport. So I think in the short and the mid term, that is going to be a very positive thing for Navigator that Donald Trump comes in and liberalizes energy production in the US. I hope that it doesn't end up in trade friction with China and retaliation in terms of tariffs and so on, but we'll have to see. My hope is that China will see it as an opportunity to import more energy from the US to balance that trade deficit that we've seen that is clearly too big between China and the US. So that brings more hope too.
Yeah, well, and that reminded me of a few things. As we're talking about politics and all of the things that are going on, one of the things that has benefited shipping broadly is the geopolitical tension that's been going on, whether it's tariffs on Russia, the inability to transit the Red Sea. Can you maybe talk through how big of a benefit or potential risk those would be if there is some normalization in some of those categories for Navigator?
Yeah, I mean, the main impact, I mentioned it briefly at the beginning, that the change in ammonia production or trade patterns have been that a lot less flows from natural gas in Russia into Ukraine to become ammonia and out of the Black Sea. That ceased. And I just don't see a scenario, even if there is some sort of a peace agreement entered into, that Europe will start importing LNG-based products from Russia anytime soon. I think it will take a long time, if ever that is to be restored. So I don't see that normalizing itself. I think Russia will have difficulty mending the scars with Europe that have come, and So I think we'll have a status quo where all the ammonia or used in Europe will come from faraway places, and it'll be transported on Navigator ships. When it comes to the Red Sea, it hasn't impacted us much. We don't transport much through the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. Most of our trade lanes, they go from North America to China through the Panama Canal and also to Europe straight across the Atlantic. So it's very rare that we transit through. We do some distribution in the Mediterranean. We do some distribution in Persian Gulf, Indian Sea, but that's not really been affected by the Houthis and the closure of the Bab el Mandeb, the strait. So in that sense, whatever happens in the Middle East, it doesn't impact our business as such.
Unless
it goes completely crazy, but a normalization would not be a negative thing for us.
Yeah, understood. And then the last thing, as you were talking earlier, that came to my mind is what we didn't really hit is why the business is growing as much as it is out of the United States. Can you maybe talk through sort of natural gas liquids or the feedstock for what you're moving primarily, and how is the movement of that different than it would be, say, for oil in terms of the underlying supply and demand?
Yeah, I mean, the good news is that there is plenty of gas available in the basins in Texas, and it's not so difficult to access. The U.S. pipeline operators have built a tremendous and very well-developed pipeline grid. That means that it can be transported very efficiently from the production site to storage and to exports. The demand in the U.S. is relatively flat. It's growing a little bit, but most all of the additional growth that's coming in the production of natural gas liquids will have to be exported. And it's difficult to continue storing it. There's not that much storage capacity, so it has to go when it's being produced. The gas that's being produced in Texas is wet. So that means that when you do get a lot of methane up, which is the big volume, but you also get the natural gas liquid. So the ethane, the propane, the butane, and so on, and that's all the stuff that we are transporting. So it's a byproduct for the producers of LNG or natural gas. But we're happy about it, and you can flare it, and you shouldn't. It's not being demanded in the U.S., so it has to go on export, and that's why it's so cheap onshore in the U.S. It has to be exported, and these are the arbitrages that it's so cheap on site in North America, and it's in high demand in China and Europe. So in addition to this, many of the European crackers, they have had negative margins for a long time, and they need to find a way to produce their ethylene and so on cheaper. And that means that they will demand more ethane coming into Europe instead of the naphtha that they've used previously. So they also depend on cheap ethane coming in from Europe, and that's also going on our ships. So there's some structural changes, and there's a gradual growing demand of natural gas liquids in the U.S. that just is good for our business.
Okay, so now I think, unless you want to talk about the things that annoy you about Oeyvind Lindeman, we can...
nothing and what annoys me about him.
That pretty much covers it. Are we forgetting anything that's really important here? But
No, I don't think so. We're seeing a good market now, and we expect to continue to see that. We didn't talk much about supply. We didn't talk much about the order book. And I can say real quickly here that in the small gas tanker segment, there's a very small order book. In the handy size, there's a small order book. And in the mid-size, there's more of an order book, but when it comes to ethylene-capable vessels, it's quite small, and it's mainly consisting our vessels, the ones, our new buildings. So in that sense, we're quite comfortable with the line of sight we have for the next 3 years in terms of supply of new vessels in our segments. So that's also a positive, I guess, that will support the freight rates in our business.
Well, good. So demand is good. Supply is limited. Political situations, we'll see. But, you know, what can you do? So,
yes.
All right. Well, Mads, I'm out of questions, but I
no,
really,
good.
I
Thanks. I think
this
we covered a
a
lot
lot.
of
I enjoy
ground.
speaking with you.
Yeah, no, always, Ben. It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for the good conversation and all the good questions.
Well, I appreciate it, and thanks to Nicholas and the Capital Link team for putting it together.
Thank you. Cheers.